This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, or meeting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise anything in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the sky and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
People come to meditation for different reasons, but usually the vast majority of people are looking for some, say, peace of mind, some emotional stability and balance, or even say the development of wisdom and understanding of themselves and life in general. But the vast majority of people, tend to look orientate towards, like peace of mind and a sense of, say, like relaxation and a greater sense of ease in their life, because the vast majority of you, you're well aware of just the level of pressure which exists in say, like modern society, and just the whole thing with cost of living, pace of life, and just the economic pressure people are under. That people are just trying to find a skillful means to deal with the stuff that they have on a day-to-day basis. And so this very, very simple technique, meditation techniques that we do can bring about a sense of tranquility, peace of mind, emotional stability, and a potential to actually see into the stuff that we go through in our day-to-day lives and what actually occurs, say, like in relationships within family, between friends, you know, married life, you know, because all these things you know, might be a little bit testing for some people. And you find that, you know, meditators over, you know, if anyone's been meditating for, you know, even with family members, even like 4 weeks, you know, even for 5 minutes a day for 4 weeks, you know, the family members can actually see the difference in the person. You know, it's not to be said like underestimated. And you know, once you've been practicing for at least say 12 months, you usually find that the person, even if they feel that the meditation is not incredibly fantastic, you know, you should see good results from that point, because it's, you know, it's quite extensive, a 12-month time frame, even if you've only been practicing for 5 minutes a day, because, you know, it's like a compounding effect. And you know, so even 5 minutes, it's not to you know, you'll definitely see results you know, with that level of practice over time, because, you know, people's lives can be incredibly busy, demanding. Even long, say, Bhante Gunaratna in Washington State would encourage, even if they're incredibly busy top-ranking business people, CEOs, just to catch their breath and just focus on their breathing for 1 minute, you know, just for 60 seconds, maybe several times a day. You know, usually people have a 1 minute time frame, even if they're just absolutely racing around, they're working 16 hours a day. Most people can spare 60 seconds, and yeah, it's a cumulative effect. You know, you do 3 or 4 of those in a day, you know, during the lunchtime, early morning, before you go to work, maybe on the train coming back, and before you go to sleep at night, you know, focusing on the breath, or maybe some kind of very spacious, relaxed mantra. You know, you increase the training effect with the meditation practice of your choice, because with people, they tend to get better results with certain practices than others, because, you know, people have they have spiritual power in me, they have qualities that they've developed over lifetimes. A person can be a Christian practitioner, and they, you know, they can, that effect from being a Christian person means that they tend to have a greater grounding effect. So with mantras, simple mantras that you see within the early what do you call it, Christian tradition, the desert fathers in ancient Egypt and Syria and the Nile Valley, you know, people develop a propensity, a skill with very, very simple mantras, possibly even more than maybe even breath meditation initially, because it's something that they've done, might have done for years on end in the past, in past lives. And that latent ability is there deeper down in the mind. So with the meditation practice, you know, we're looking at essentially like a training effect. So the practice in itself is quite simplistic, a matter of like bringing one's attention back again and again to the meditation object of one's choice. But that's really only half the business, because it's really insight practice where the power and the influence really lies with the meditation. It's all very nice for me to say, you know, to bring your attention back again and again and again to the meditation object, but it's got like a workable limit, and it's really insight which will actually to help the person let go and help to, you know, help sort of free the mind and reduce sort of really strong attachment and clinging. Because with all of this, if we don't understand exactly why we hold on to the things that we do in life, well, you know, how can you expect a person to let go of say difficult stuff, or it can be small stuff, you know, garden variety stuff on a day-to-day basis. And so, you know, how can you expect a person to let that stuff go if they don't have some insight knowledge and some understanding in what they're going through? Because the mind in itself is quite complicated, many, many layers, many different feelings, you know, interconnected thoughts and feelings, which go, you know, on layers and layers upon layers, you know, like a one of these layered cakes, you know, deeper and deeper and deeper into the mind. And so, you know, you've got all this deeper, all this interconnected stuff like a web. And yeah, for some people, it could take even 20, 30 years to really unravel very, very deep stuff from childhood or even past lives, so it's not to be underestimated. And I saw a little, just in a nutshell, I saw a little bit of material on a lady who had this incredible photographic ability, but it was just like torture. She just couldn't stop thinking and remembering, and she felt the full emotional effect of all the stuff that she could remember, and it was just very, very difficult. Even though she's one of these exceptional people, she said on cameras that she would rather be without this this incredible ability, this photographic ability, because the mind just couldn't rest, it couldn't stop. So with all of us, so we have the peaceful side of the practice, where we just try to sort of settle oneself down with the meditation object, instead of thinking of maybe could easily be 10 or 20 things in the space of a minute that we train ourselves only to think of one thing, just to think of the breath, or think of maybe a mantra. It could be loving kindness, it could be anything, it could be Hindu, Buddhist, Muslim mantra, it could be absolutely anything in the world. If it resonates with you and it has meaning for you, that's really the meditation objects that you should use. And whatever practice that you do, it should have, you should be able to see a reasonable result with it, because, you know, meditation practice, it's about developing skills with the practice, because, you know, you might be doing this for 10, 20, 30 years, and you don't really want to waste like too much time just sort of like trying to guess, you know, what works and what, you know, what doesn't, and swapping and changing. Like if you see if you find a good technique, then it's good to sort of stick with that and then try to refine it and develop it to its best, to the best of your ability. So I mean, the monks, they tend to swap and change a lot. You know, we have like a little toolbox of stuff, different techniques that we use, and you can work with them in many, many different ways. But with the lay disciples, it's better to not to get complicated and to try to simplify things. I mean, your lives are busy enough, you've got enough stuff to do, enough to think about. So if you're able to simplify and just, you know, make the mind as simple as possible, you know, just thinking of, you know, just when you're meditating, just one thing, and even when you come out of meditation, not to train yourself in a way where you don't think excessively, and you get like a training effect which may last for several hours, because in essence, that if you're thinking excessively, you're radiating, you're diversifying your mental energy. You're actually, you know, you're spreading mental energy in over many different kinds of thoughts and feelings, and in a way, it's not a very efficient way for the mind to work. One's mental energy goes into too many directions. So you really want to have like a parameter where your mind over time, could be a number of years, where your mind only moves within a certain parameter. I mean, easier said than done, but you know, this is the training principle, and so we minimize the run of emotions, the run of thoughts that you experience, because if you think too much, you feel, you know, if you run through too many feelings, if you think excessively, it's not necessarily a pleasant experience, and it does, you know, it does waste energy. And you find that if you do these little these very, very simple mantras, so just like a one mantra per minute, it could be anything. It could be something like the Christian mantra called Ram, or could be Bhutto, the Theravadan tradition, could be absolutely anything whatsoever from any religious tradition in the world. So one little mantra per minute, but all day and night, 16, 18 hours a day. Within a couple of days, you know, you'll start to see the mind settle down. But one of the advantages with this technique is it actually sharpens you. Even though it's incredibly light, it sharpens your focus, your mindfulness, and it makes your mind, it increases your sensory awareness, and it actually does make you smarter. It makes you sharper. So you have this very, very light say focus or concentration, which is not the correct word really, this sort of this background focus stillness, which makes the mind more efficient. And you can be a lawyer, you can be in a courtroom, you can be a high power CEO, but you can do this practice all day and night, 18 hours a day, and it won't slow you down and it won't affect your memory to any noticeable degree. It'll actually increase the power of your memory because you're increasing alertness, mindfulness. So it's a very light, spacious, easy practice for people who are just full on working, you know, like 16 hours a day, sometimes even two or three jobs, some people. So there's a little trick that I picked up, and I had a gentleman ringing me from India for about 4 days straight, and this technique worked so well that he basically stopped calling. He stopped calling after 4 days. But the thing is, you know, he was really really keen on the meditation practice, and you know, he had like some difficult stuff to work with, but it worked really really well, and I tried it over just a little bit over a couple of days, and I was just amazed how well it worked. But I actually had one of the lay disciples put me onto it, and when things get really really tricky and difficult, this is a good practice that works well. The way it works is that when the lights are eventually dropped and you focus and your eyes are closed, you focus on that dark space, that darkness, the dark colour in the mind. And the reason why it works, why it's so effective, is that it draws your attention away from thinking, feeling and physical body, which is exactly what you want to do. It's a very neutral meditation, just focusing on the darkness in the mind, the dark space, dark colour in the mind. But I was amazed just how effective it was. And for people who struggle with the meditation in the beginning, it's a nice one to start with. And then once you get some sharpness, you get some tranquility, then you can go to the meditation, the breathing meditation if you choose. But you can use this one as long as it works for you. So I'll make a start. And so just get yourself in a comfortable position with your back straight, your hands in your lap. Have your head upright but comfortable, and make sure there's nothing tight around the throat, the waist, the wrists. And what we'll do is say minimum 5 minutes, and we'll focus on that dark colour. So as you close your eyes, that dark colour in the mind as your meditation object, in a very very relaxed way, and just mentally very relaxed, physically relaxed, and just focus on that dark colour in the mind with your eyes closed for the next 5 minutes. this particular meditation, don't be concerned how, if you think at all, if you think too much, just keep focusing on that dark colour in the mind. The new people that are here, I'll just do a slightly different take with the breathing meditation, which is one of the main meditations that we do for peacefulness of mind. And so what I'll get you to do is, because a moving object is easier to track than a stationary one, so I want you to watch the breathing, especially with new people, as the breathing comes in through the nose. So with eyes closed, we're breathing in through the nose. I want you to watch the breathing at the nose and then moving down at the throat level, middle of the chest, and then abdomen. And then from abdomen, middle of the chest, throat and nose. So as the breath moves in and out of the body, I want you to follow the breath from the nose all the way down to the abdomen, and then from the abdomen all the way up to the nose. It's like it gives your mind, your attention, like some work to do before, some stability, a little bit of stability before we lock on to, say, one area only. So we'll do that for the next, say, 10 minutes. as you follow this moving breath, just breathe slowly and deeply. It just makes it a little bit easier to follow. You develop this particular meditation, just try to focus on the feelings, the actual bodily feeling as you're breathing in and out of the body. do now is we'll stop watching the moving breathing meditation, and now we'll watch the breathing in one place only. So I want you to focus on the feelings around the mouth. So as you're breathing in through the nose, you'll still sense the sensations around the mouth, and this is quite a, it's fairly sharp, but it's still, because the feelings around the mouth are very distinct, they're very clear. This is why I always recommend this, and I've done this for years and years and years, and it does work quite well, very easy to follow, easy to track. So I just want you to watch and focus on the feelings around the mouth as you breathe in through the nose. And we'll do that for the rest of the session. So if your attention keeps wandering and you still keep thinking, just initially bring your attention back to the feeling of the breathing around the mouth at the moment. you find that you're still thinking excessively, then if you can just try to understand that mood, that mind state, that feeling, and try to understand everything about it, because the reason why these thoughts keep persisting is because one's insight into that experience hasn't gone deep enough. So when you understand these things to a significant degree, the mind understands and it relaxes and it lets go. So if you have a persistent memory of a friend, maybe of work or something which happened in the past, try to understand, just explore it, be your own psychologist, try to understand everything about it, and then just watch the mind, watch the clinging nature of the mind, and as you, the more you understand that experience, the easier it will be for you to let it go over time. we're coming towards the end of the meditation, so just reflect back and see if you can see any change in the peacefulness of the mind. And I'll ring the gong 3 times and you can open your eyes when you're ready. Did anyone have any questions on the meditation at all? Anyone not able to get peaceful whatsoever in any way? I'll pass on another couple of little tricks.
The black spot doesn't stay black.
What, it gets white and like the sun?
It tries to grow.
What does it do?
It just tries to grow light.
Those becomes bright like the sun?
Not as much as that, but doesn't stay black. It just goes
yeah, because people will be different, but the thing is as well, if you've got really good meditation, the light in the mind might actually increase if you've got really good meditation.
Yep.
Off the
switch itself.
I noticed that it was is it like a time
when you go quiet for a minute?
It's automatic, is it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
it's automatic.
Press the button. Oh, that's weird.
Blue light.
I actually found it helpful.
Yeah, I quite like it myself.
Yeah, and I looked for the dark in my head. So it would go light at the top, but I'd move around in my head and find a dark spot.
Yeah, especially with people, their experiences sort of vary widely. So, you know, no two people will be the same. Mm. But the bottom line is that each person has to find the meditation technique which works for them, even if it's quite unusual. Some people can do very, very well with visualizations, but and it's more complicated, but some people, it is probably the best meditation that they can do. Because their mind is constantly moving, thinking, but they can still get quite focused. If you do things like a person maybe standing on a beach watching the waves rolling in with the sun in the sky, and then turning around and going into maybe a forest and into a church in the middle of a clearing, you know, you can, most people can visualize that without great difficulty, but it's quite good for mindfulness. If the breath is too boring, mantras are too boring, you can get some very good visualizations online by professional lay teachers, which might work very well.
I thought that was very good, actually. I'd better come up and stay for
the darkness.
and the breaths and that.
Yeah, it's good to hear.
I've got a question.
Yep.
You say a lot when you, sometimes it can go bright. But if it can go bright, like through you, it becomes bright everywhere while your eyes are closed.
Yeah, I mean, if people, if your focus really starts to get quite sharp and the mental energy increases, say for example, when people get very good meditation, there's two things which happen. The super sensual bliss. Everyone has that when you have, say, very, like, say, really profound meditation. But some people have the light as well, because you're looking at an increase in the mental energy, the sharpness. So some people have the light, some people don't. But everyone has that super sensual bliss when they go really, really deep. But you can even, if somebody can go to that level, they can even focus on that light. They can use that as an intermediate object before they go to full tranquility or peacefulness. You know, if you're a lay practitioner and you can do that kind of thing, you should really just stop work. I mean, you may have children and be married and possibly, but if you're unmarried and you have no children, you should really just go straight to the monastery for the rest of your life. I'm not messing around. I really mean that.
A few lifetimes.
Yeah, it takes several lifetimes for you to reach that stage. If you can do that in like, you know, how busy the world is, if you can do that in the world, it means you've got real potential and you really haven't got time to waste. So, do you want me to give a talk on anything in particular? Give me anything whatsoever, no matter how bizarre or strange or provocative. There's got to be something, one subject, any subject. This lady here, bop, shut up his hand. The lady leaves.
Not really strange or provocative, but considering we're in the new year, could you maybe give us a talk on resolutions?
Resolutions of mind. So every single one of you, you know the kind of lifestyle you lead and your daily routine and this and that. So when we look at our personality, our character, as a whole, you know, we may feel that there are certain aspects of ourselves that we would like to improve or increase. You know, it could be increasing strengths of personality, or it could be anything like communication skills. Or say, for example, if I had trouble with it could be anything like irritation or jealousy. Especially with insight knowledge, gaining an understanding of what those states mean and why. Because it's all very nice to have, say, resolutions, but it also needs to be accompanied by insight. So if I see an area of myself which needs to, could be like brushing up or maybe to bring the mind into balance, or you know, could be part of my life which needs to be sort of, yeah, you know, might be lacking in some way. It could be family relationships, isn't that? So, you know, I understand clearly why I had this intention, for what purpose, maybe for personal improvement or whatnot. And so how do I go about this? So I have, you know, if you look at the four roads to power, or say the four bases of success, which I can relate to this. So I have this. Oh God, I lost my train of thought. I sort of I have this this intention to improve my it's an area of my life. I have this resolution. So the first stage, I had this intention, I had this thought, I want to bring about maybe some kind of change or improvement in my lifestyle. Maybe I've got a resolution to, you could have a resolution to maybe polish or improve one's partner. That's a possibility. And,
mind your own business.
Hey?
Mind your own business.
Yeah, yeah, they might tell you that. Exactly. So, and so you have the first thought. And then the second stage is to exert energy in this direction. So the resolution, you start to get the ball rolling. How? This is where the thinking process has got to come in. You start to apply energy in different ways, because everyone knows there's many ways to skin a cat. You know, you've got a goal, and there's a number of avenues to achieve your personal goals. So you exert energy and you start moving. You exert efforts to achieve one's goal, and in different ways. And when the third stage is full application of mind and body. So as all of you know, that all the great successful high-powered people that we see in the world, could be on the internet when people check podcasts and the lightning of the lives of these people, one thing you see is full application of both mental, emotional, psychological, and physical energy. Because as everyone's aware, no one gets nothing in life without, you know, really consistent effort. You know, all the successful people we see don't get handed their success, their big businesses, their positions as CEOs. They don't get handed to them on a plate. You know, these people have to work really, really hard for many years to get where they are. So you're looking at full application of mind and body. And the fourth principle is the wisdom component, which watches over absolutely everything you do from start to finish, from the beginning point to the end. It's wisdom and insight which guides you, which removes obstacles and blocks. So, for example, you know, you may need to go round something, or you may need to go under. So, if anything comes up which blocks or hinders or slows your resolution, you know, why is this so? So, your wisdom faculty is going to ask. I have an ambition to achieve a particular goal or resolution. But you know, progress is a little slow, or my physical, it could be anything, even things like my physical capacity. So for example, young girl came upstairs. This is quite interesting. Caught me on the hop. Your mother says to me, my daughter has a problem. Can you see exactly what's wrong with her? And I said, what? Like, your daughter looks okay to me, reasonable young person, young teenager, not deformed, two arms and legs, senses are intact. And then her mother just started laughing at me, you know. But the point was, her young teenager, probably 13, 14, but you know, she wants to become a professional athlete, and I don't pretend to know a lot about these things. You know, I'm not on the internet very much at all. But the thing, there's certain bits and pieces you can basically draw on. And so with this young person, with her emotional makeup, she had a sense of fear and worry, which was actually like hindering the full expression of her, basically the mind and body component. So instead of getting, an absolute full release of energy, full release of physical performance, full release of emotional, psychological performance, the possibly the doubting emotions, maybe kind of maybe a little bit of fear or worry, was actually slowing her down, and from that maximum ability. And so we went over these four bases of success. But the bottom line is, with even with professional athletes, young or even intermediate, middle-aged athletes who do marathons and triathlons and this kind of thing, it's good that people understand themselves emotionally, because in relation to this, like many years ago, Arnold Schwarzenegger actually said this I think it's in his weight training manual. My father had this book, and it's quite thick, it's a full it's a professional volume. And he said that he was never, this guy's very, very ambitious at that time, right through the course of his life. I don't know exactly what he's doing these days, but he said he was never afraid to basically pass out in the gym while he was training. So you know the kind of weights these guys push, and the potential, there is the physical body physical possibilities that a person could basically faint. I wouldn't doubt that, but he was never afraid to basically faint or pass out in front of his fraternity, in front of his boys, in front of his team, the guys he was working out with. And in a sense, it's like that sense of fearlessness and the confidence and the inner confidence. It doesn't restrict you. So for example, even if you're in the office, you're in the gym, personal relationships, everyone has certain emotions which might basically slow you down in some way. But the bottom line is that people, they've really got to understand themselves emotionally. If I have a certain emotional problem, this is the monk's job, that you really have to understand everything about this, because if you don't, it's going to continue. It could have been there for several lifetimes, and the forcefulness and the energy behind that, if it keeps returning again and again and again, it's telling you that you don't understand me, you don't know where I'm coming from, you're not developing full comprehension into this experience. So every single one of us, and especially monastics, because we go through this again and again and again and again, thousands and thousands of times, you try to understand it from a full 360 degree perspective, with no stone unturned, because when you understand it completely, it will stop. It will stop right there in a very, very short space of time. I had a person like sort of slap me around in the monastery, sort of give me a couple of whacks, and I thought that was quite strange. I usually don't take offence that easily, and I thought, what is this guy doing? And I couldn't let it go for about 7 days, and I thought, I've tried everything. I've tried different meditations. I've tried to examine this in different ways, and the bottom line was, I had to accept that this person is psychologically not right. Mm-hmm. And after I came to that point, after a week, that this person is not normal, and they're psychologically not completely together, it just stopped right there. That was a good lesson, because usually within days I can usually get on top of different things. But that was a good lesson for me. Once you accept the fact that person's not right. But the mind come up. It's not, the mind can come up with all sorts of stuff. But it's the skill of the practitioner to work with different mind states. And these people, no matter who they are, inside, outside the monastery, mum and dad, it's like they're your teachers. They're bringing up this material, but your responsibility is to really try to comprehend and develop an understanding, because it's basically otherwise it continues the karma. This kind of karma continued. Who knows? I'm not playing around when I say this. I could have done something wrong by that person realistically, and this is why that circumstance came up again. I mean, why else? Why? No one else. That's the first time that ever happened. First time in all the time inside the monastery. But you know, it's very, very likely I could have wronged him in some way, and then that event comes up. But with all, every single one of us, the wisdom faculty has to watch over with one's motivation, one's intention, and the resolution. And you think to yourself, well, with this resolution, is it realistic? Am I being, is it workable? Can I achieve this? Like, I'm not going to have a resolution which is completely out of my grasp. I'm going to work on steps, some stages. I might need, if it's something, amazing, I might have to take like baby steps, and then I achieve like just little goals in the beginning. It's something I can achieve in the beginning stages, maybe in the first couple of weeks or so. And because this incredible plan that I've got could take 5 years if it's really really like high rank, so baby steps, and then something that I can achieve every several weeks, every couple of months, and then I can sense that I'm actually getting somewhere. It's realistic, and it's based in reality. And I watch the progress of my development, and you can do mantras. You can do loving kindness, compassion mantras. Like may I be such and such. But you do them continually. Metta and compassion makes people soft, so you may not want to do this kind of stuff excessively, but you can increase the positive energy and the motivation of the mind and one's attitude. You just do them for 60 seconds only, and you do them continuously. You increase the strength, the psychological energy, the firmness of the mind. And as long as you feel comfortable with it, because people can motivate themselves with these kind of practices, but they do make people so emotionally soft if they do them excessively.
You must be a very kind person.
Me?
Yeah.
Sometimes. Well, the average person on the street, they probably might blow their top, but the thing is, it's a test. If someone starts giving a cup of wax, and they try to make me angry, and I don't basically flip at that point, then I'm doing okay. But but you'll still get some underlying stuff. You won't flip, but you get the underlying resentment. Why did that guy do that? For what? There's no need. I've always been friendly, this and that. I never slighted them in any way. And then you get that kind of thing. But it's just tricky stuff that you just have to work with. Because if it's not that person, it's if it's with my karma, if it's not that guy, it'll be somebody else. And it's just a bit later, a little bit further down the track. I mean, all of us have got our karma we have to work with. So that's what is in store. I won't go into that one. It's a bit tricky. Disciples. But yeah, I mean, one of our disciples, her husband passed away yesterday morning, and it wasn't an absolute tragedy. He had cancer, he had chemotherapy, but fortunately he was sitting in his favourite chair. It was early morning, sitting in his favourite chair in the backyard, having his coffee, and he must have had a massive cardiac arrest, and he passed away, but she took it just really, really well and amazingly well. And but the thing is that it's better. I mean, if I was in his shoes, that's the way I would like to go. I mean, who wants to die in a hospital among strangers when you can die in your backyard with a nice coffee in your favourite chair? I'm not joking.
Yeah, it's true. It is true.
Yeah, it's a beautiful way to die. His wife was there. She was able to just maybe a small degree. I mean, he was the cardiac arrest was massive. He had, he was shaking in his chair, and it is frightening. There's no doubt about it. It's frightening for one's wife to go through that. But she was there, and she could give at least a small degree of support.
At least you got to have a cuppa.
Yeah, yeah. I hope the quality of the coffee was good.
A good cup of coffee.
My father's, a friend of mine. He's mentioned this before. He was he had his breakfast. He had his cornflakes. He was reading the paper. His wife and his daughter just went out into the backyard to check the vegetable patch. They were out there for not even 5 minutes, 7 minutes, 3 or 4 minutes, came back, and her husband was gone. He just had a silent heart attack, and he just collapsed into his new newspaper. He was gone, and very fast.
Yeah, lucky.
Well, it's nice to be at home with your family. I mean, they're not right there with you, but it's nice, you've had your breakfast, reading the paper, it's better than maybe being in pain, in a hospital ward. I mean, many of you have skills. Many of you have been through this multiple times. You understand this very, very well. But I think it's a fantastic way to go.
Ajahn, going back to your four pillars of wisdom.
Four roads to power.
Yeah. Would that be something you can apply to art and music and particular things like that?
You can. You can, because you're working on a mind level. So, for example, you're interested in sculpture. You like to sculpture in stone, and you can. That principle, the first three stages are based on effort, on energy, mind and body, and the fourth one is the wisdom component. But the wisdom component is there from start to finish. But you can easily say, for example, Ajahn Tanisro on access to insight. He's got. I checked this a number of years ago. He's got a nice take on that process. And the Buddhist teaching is quite very, very brief. But if you get some very, very comprehensive Buddhist scholars, they can give you a very, very broad take, or say treatise on this, with many, many examples. So you can start with Ajahn Tanisro, access to insight. You can get on your phone. I think it's quite a big file. It's probably about 60-something megs, 67. It's usually pretty cool with most people. And then you've got all the links. Say four roads to power, four bases of success, and you'll get it up very, very quick. It's all HTML linked from everything, all the subjects, all the topics. So, should we call it an evening? Maybe.
And if I'm doing good, yay! Thank you all.